you like to come over? I specifically rigged it up so we could come sit over here at these tables and have a chat. Not that it's not covered in laundry or anything.
Oh, I like the fact that we're not sitting in front of the computer.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of nice.
Way to go.
These nice long cables.
Hi,
you know?
Papers.
Hello, junk. I swear to God, maybe
somebody's been studying.
Maybe I'm Sudoku, like, broken, but I don't get how this game works.
Is that the one Sudoku card that was in your bicycle card?
Yeah, what of it? What of it?
Oh, I'm not... No,
what do we do today? Today we went over traction sprints, KEDs, and medical patient. And then actually our student response team, my small group that I work with, we all did a assessment with the teacher.
How'd that go?
It, you know, like that really high-stress situation where you come into a room and you don't know what's going on. All we knew is trauma.
Which is like your previous practical exam, your midterm.
Yeah, and this time I was oxygen and sort of supporting help, and Dylan was the front runner.
Mm-hmm.
Is this your sock?
That is my sock.
Well, fair enough.
I don't know if I have a matching one to it, though. I don't know if it has a pair.
And it went pretty well. He did a lot of things that I wouldn't have remembered to do, you know, but was certainly had a... The patient was complaining of leg pain, and then he also said that his head hurt, but he didn't do anything about the head hurting.
Dylan didn't do anything about the head hurting?
He's focused on the leg. He's like, okay, leg, because the first thing he said was leg, so he's like, okay, well, let's do leg then. You know, actually, I'll hold on to this, thank you.
What was the...
Oh,
mechanism of injury.
I mean, the call originally was there's a neighbor was driving by and saw someone lying in the grass, made the call and ran off, you know. So we come in, but it was basically he was trying to get his cat out of a tree and he fell and hit his head and broke his tibia fibia.
Mm. So,
but we did the whole thing. We got there, we talked to him, put him on oxygen. Splinted his leg, put him on a backboard, took his blood pressure several times.
Took C-spine precautions?
Oh, so much C-spine precautions. You would believe how much C-spine precautions you did. Strap him on the backboard and carried him off. And we had to redo the strapping a little bit because the teacher wasn't very proud of it.
So what was the overall evaluation of your
assessment? It went well.
Assessment?
He said it went well.
Good.
Yeah. Anyways... to get to our main point tonight, because it sounds like we have better things to do.
Saving the world one SRT at a time.
Sorry, did you hear that? There's like a gunshot outside?
Yes, I did.
Okay, good.
It's a regular occurrence.
No, it's not.
Yes, it
don't lie to the viewers at home. We live in the widest neighborhood in all of Santa Cruz, which is one of the widest towns in all of California.
All of California.
All right. Today we're going to talk about wind power. Is this interesting enough?
Yes.
Okay.
I think so.
Shane Brimble was supposed to join us, but it sounds like World of Warcraft was far more... far more important for him. So as Anita does sound effects, we'll get to the meat of the subject here. In full disclosure, the reason I'm bringing this up is because... I just recently subscribed for a year to a company called Renewable Choice Energy, which can be found at renewablechoice.com. And this is a credit-based energy system. And
offset, based on offsetting.
Right. And it's not like Enron, as the blogosphere has been blowing it out of proportions. I've done a little bit of research on this, and it sounds like a lot of people have been getting this company wrong. But also, a lot of people are complaining about wind power in general. And so I just wanted to bring up some of the highlights and see what you and no one else, since our guests can't seem to come through. I don't know. I mean, like, he just said he would do it, and then he stopped responding to me. But...
maybe his computer crashed.
I did only give him... he needs to call me on a phone, though. You know?
Well,
and he was on the computer.
He could have messaged you.
Yeah, I don't know.
And maybe his phone's dead.
We were using two forms of communication, and he said yes to one of... I don't know. Anyways. I did only give him an hour's notice, so. I need a producer. Shat!
Whoa, Shat!
Okay. Anyway, so we talked about this last night. I explained it in garish detail. Would you like to summarize it for anyone who isn't me?
I'd prefer your explanation.
Okay. I was just wondering if you know. So,
I think he's got a more succinct idea of what's going on here. I could get pretty wordy. About wind power and...
Yeah, so let's talk about wind power first. So, wind power is, to get basic here, is created by turbines, which are basically gigantic fans that work in reverse.
If you drive through the Midwest and a lot of California, Eastern California, you'll see them. And I advise not watching them while you're driving because you will be hypnotized.
And crash. But they use the power of wind turns these gigantic blades, which can be upward of 300 or 400 feet. Not the blades, but the towers. And they're becoming larger and more efficient. But the efficiency is very strange with wind power. It's not like other kinds of power, which is a kind of a consistent efficiency, because you have to consider a lot of odd things about how fast the turbines spin. And from my very, very superficial research that I did today, it looks like a wind turbine is actually most efficient around 10 to 15 miles an hour, the wind blowing.
What is the minimum amount of wind you need to turn a turbine? Do you know?
I think it would depend on the turbine
on
and
the turbine itself.
Resistance that is built into that type of turbine, you know. Mm. But the larger resistance,
the more wind,
the more energy can be created, and the more wind you'll need mm-hmm. to create that energy, you know. I suppose harness that energy. The energy is already there. Mm-hmm. And so this technology has been going on for a long time. The Altamont Pass in California is one of the most historic kind of places. It's been around since the 1980s, and you know, a lot of broken ones just sort of sitting around, but they're very stark against the landscape, and some people see it as majestic, others see it as hideous and godly.
Other or surreal.
And very strange altogether. They're not like most things that we see on
landscapes. They're a bit otherworldly, in my opinion.
Yeah. There's a lot of consideration that needs to be taken in. One of the major criticisms of wind power is it just won't work everywhere. And a lot of companies the big companies that see this as kind of taking advantage of global warming fear are using this time to cash in on things like wind power to start up a system of wind energy somewhere where it won't actually be viable to maintain it, and it would just be sort of like a waste of money. But in the same way that ethanol is negatively efficient, some companies are just getting into it to do the startup portion of it and sell it in some complicated capitalistic way. And so there's a lot of companies that are creating wind power in the middle of our country where there's not a lot of consistent wind, and it's driving people nuts. There's specifically one guy who's doing a lot of fighting in one area in Virginia, in West Virginia, he has three arguments, I suppose. Aesthetics, environmental, and then the economic. The economic one is what I just explained, that it's not actually going to be meaningful. It's not going to make much of a difference, really, considering how much energy could be harvested, but isn't going to be. And then he also talks about the aesthetics of it. And it seems kind of elitist in a lot of ways, because it's marring the landscape.
It's the same sort of argument with cell phone towers.
Right.
In a way.
Yeah, absolutely.
That, I mean, I suppose the use of cell phones is much higher than the use in harnessing wind energy. I don't know, but
they could equally.
That's an argument. I mean, yeah. A lot of communities get into there's a lot of protest going on, I'm sure, even now about cell phone towers and how they, no one wants a cell phone tower next to their house, but everyone wants a cell phone.
Right, exactly. So that's why they made those hideous tree-like cell phone towers. They have the palm tree ones down south, and up here they have redwood-shaped ones that are, they're terrible. Yeah, so that same kind of concept, because they have to be really good and efficient, they have to be on the top of mountain ranges, you know, so they're the most obvious place. Right. They can't be really hidden too well. And so they're making things ugly, but I don't know.
I really
like them.
I like them too. I don't think that they're that ugly. I think that in a way that they're a beautiful thing that man's constructed.
Yeah, no, I've always thought they're pretty nifty looking.
I do have, you're saying something about the environmental aspect of it. Did that have to do with migrational patterns of birds?
I didn't see that so much. Mm-hmm. Maybe you'd like to fill us in, but what I discovered is lots of bats and birds being killed by these things. Bats makes more sense because they use sonar to move around, and those blades are turning, and they just don't have time to respond, and they'll run into them. Right. They are making turbines that are more flexible, so mm-hmm. when things hit them, they don't become as injured.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a big consideration for certain types of hawks who are flying around Altamont Pass. But some scientists say that most birds in their flying altitudes.
Mm-hmm.
Just normally fly
above them,
those ranges anyway, so it's not actually a big concern. What would you say about migratory
patterns? Well, I know that there was a particular incident probably 5 or 6 years ago in Florida where they had built a wind farm,
mm-hmm.
and there was an entire flock of birds that flew through this wind farm, and it was a large flock of birds, and they actually ended up a lot of the flock was sort of massacred in a way, that's how people put it, by these blades. Because there were so many of the birds, and they weren't expecting, evidently this was a pretty large wind farm, they were pretty, you know, the elevation was pretty high where they were, and the birds flew into the blades and killed a lot of the flock. I mean, there were supposedly dead birds everywhere, and so after that particular incident, there was a huge uproar about wind farms and how environmentally safe they actually are. They were accusing the company itself of, as far as I know, of knowing the migratory patterns of the birds and seeing that they were there, and then of course building it anyway, saying the birds are going to see them, they're going to fly through them, they're going to avoid them, you know, just like they would anything else, and obviously that did not happen.
No.
And there was a lot of birds that ended up...
That does seem like a bit of an anomaly, though.
Yeah. And then there was another... I mean, there's other situations where, oh, endangered birds fly through this area, and this mm-hmm. is upon their migratory pattern, and it can, you know, increase the amount of deaths from the endangered birds and that kind of thing. So that's been an argument continuing, and I'm not sure, just like you were saying with the... some of the scientific evidence about it affecting birds, not affecting birds. But there is also a lot of evidence about the wind farms not affecting, even if they are in the middle of migratory patterns. However, now that red flag has been put up, companies are being monitored, and there's definitely environmental groups are monitoring the companies and encouraging them, making them aware of bird migration patterns or migratory patterns, and hoping that, you know, pushing them not to build in those areas. So that's what I know about migratory patterns and wind farms.
Right, in Thomas, West Virginia, in 2003, 2,000 bats were killed over the course of the year.
I haven't heard anything about the bats, which is interesting, but that area of the South is pretty... it's a big place for bats.
And that's what some activists in the area are saying, is that it's really deeply affecting the wildlife there.
The bat populations.
But as I was reading the article about that, I mean, not to make it really silly, but really, what's worse? Losing some bats? Losing all bats, maybe, even? Or global warming destroying all animals?
Mm.
I know, it's a bit harsh, but I mean, if you think about it, what is the South going to use in place of wind turbines? They use coal.
Almost they use that exclusively, yeah. Pretty much.
And so anything that replaces, I mean, coal isn't good for birds.
No.
It's probably a lot worse. I mean, I didn't gather any statistics, but I assume more birds die from, you know, emphysema and related. Mm-hmm. Birds get emphysema.
I think there's a bird leukemia. There's a bird
okay,
cancer.
Okay, sure. Leukemia, that sounds good. Bird cancer. That sounds even worse. Yeah, so from coal power, you know. I'd imagine relative to, I don't know. But then you would need a lot more turbines, so it's...
Right.
But...
Well, I think you would have
things die when you do things.
Well, you'd carefully have to monitor the... you'd have to monitor the amount of bats that are being killed. I mean, I think bats are, in a way, really important to that area because of the mosquito populations in the area.
That's true.
And bats are sort of one of the number one... predators
skeeter eaters,
yeah. So in general, especially during the summer when the mosquitoes are out on rampages, the bats are wonderful because they eliminate them, or they at least keep them into a moderate population. So, and then there's also the theory that possibly the bats eliminating the mosquitoes is also eliminating the possibility of diseases obtained from mosquito bites. So, by building on farms, you're affecting a cycle.
Yeah.
And I think just to be aware of that and, you know, somehow monitor it would make sense. And I see no reason why that's not possible or maybe already isn't being done.
I mean, yeah, certainly lots of forms of energy kill all sorts of things. Mm-hmm. Dams, you know, kill salmon. And
yeah, Colorado River, Hoover Dam.
And coal kills ducks and things right. like that. I mean, it's kind of hard to find a good, you know, energy source other than nuclear, which is obviously the correct choice. But it's kind of hard to talk about the mass effects of flying creatures in terms of wind because we don't really...
No.
Have a lot. I mean,
yeah.
As of 2004, a third of a percent of our energy in this country is done by wind.
Wow.
But
that's not
according to projections, by 2020, 5 to 10% will be.
That's still such a small amount.
Powered. But it's probably about where it's going to stay. Wind power isn't for the whole country. Wind power can't be for the whole country. It's good in location, and some places can do it exclusively.
Right.
But I don't think anyone's trying to propose it as the end all. I think diversification is really what people, you know, are looking for here.
Does this particular company offer any other offsets by any other type of alternative energy?
No. Yeah.
Resources?
No, they just wind.
Just wind?
Yeah.
I wonder if there are some available for solar.
Solar offsets.
Or water power.
Crediting things, I'm sure. Yeah, but part of what makes this, so interesting to this company, I'm sure, but you know, just all companies, is the reimbursements that the government will give, because there's so much just like kind of free money out there for startup companies to come in and gather up just by gobbling up communities and putting all this, you know, fancy pants green stuff around them, and then in a lot of cases they're actually making money off of just doing it. The government, in full, will pay for everything and then even give them more money on top of that just with all the little subsidies and loans and grants and silly little, you know, things that the government does. Subsidies, that's the word. Subsidies.
Subsidies.
And there are actually precedent cases of people making $25 million net profit just off of building something, let alone, you know.
Building what?
Building a green wind turbine system.
Oh, okay.
In some area of the country. And that's not even counting using it and making the money off of use. Anyways, getting to this company, Renewable Energy, or whatever it's called. the way their system works is you pay them to buy wind credits. So you have your normal PG&E type of system. They're based out of Boulder, Colorado, but I think they're sort of spread out a bit somehow. I don't really know how energy transfer works, and I'm not going to think about it too hard. But so what they do is they put up wind towers, harvest the energy, and then sell it to PG&E. PG&E, in turn, has to spend that much less money on other forms like coal. And so, you know, thus decreasing the effects by that much amount. And so I give them a certain amount of money on top of my PG&E bill, not even related to it. And so the PG&E gets their money, and then this company gets a little bit of money on their own, and they use that money to buy up more and more of PG&E's energy and shifting it over to wind as opposed to something a little less desirable. So the concept is that, you know, over time they could take over all or most of energy consumption and shift PG&E's needs to just wind power and other renewable things. And so it seems kind of odd at first because I'm giving this company $5 a month, which isn't a lot, but considering I also have to pay for my other bill, it's sort of a silly concept that I'm just giving a company $5 a month. It's almost like giving a company just $5 a month as a donation. Not that companies really need donations, you know. But if you think about it, give it a little simmer. Maybe look it up online. I think it really does actually contribute validly, providing that wind power is a proper you know, form of energy.
It's an investment. I guess it's an environmental. It's an investment in a renewable resource, energy alternative. If you want, that might be an interesting way to think about it. Instead of investing in stocks, you're investing directly into a company that will offset your energy intake. So it's a good thing. But it's one of those things that I know I had to let simmer for a while because it seemed to be all floating in my head, these ideas about offsetting energy and such, and not seeing a PG&E bill that was, you know, $10 less, $20 less every month, you know, that kind of thing.
But they do give you a Whole Foods gift certificate, so that just makes up for it. So to close it out, don't want to make this obscenely long, but the CEO, this 27-year-old CEO of this little company, was asked on an online interview what are the main arguments against wind power, and he said cats and not in my backyard. And the not in my backyard is sort of a catchphrase, which means you know, I want wind power, but
I don't want the
turbine look at it, you know.
In my backyard.
I want all the positive effects and none of the negative.
Right.
And the other one was cats. Cats. Cats, he says, kill 20 times more birds than wind turbines do.
Oh, well, that's an interesting argument.
And the reporter said, but, you know, I mean, there are websites devoted specifically to getting rid of cats and talking about how much they hate cats because of what they do to birds.
Right.
And the company owner here broke it down like this. Out of 10,000 bird deaths, 5,500 of those are from buildings and windows. So that's more than half. 1,000 of those are from cats. 800 are from flying into power lines. 700 from vehicles. Another 700 from pesticides. And out of all turbine deaths, out of that 10,000, it's less than 1%.
Wow.
I mean, one bird, you know.
Right.
So a percentage of a bird. So when you look at it like that, it's sort of hard to consider, you know, I mean, providing those are valid numbers, and he's not including bats. How important that is, I don't know what the real bat numbers are, I mean, but obviously that has always been a main argument, probably the most prominent argument against wind power, and looking at it like that makes you kind of want to cut down buildings or something.
Right.
You know, I mean, or kill cats.
At least put something up in the window so the birds can
recognize
it.
I guess we shouldn't really be declawing cats. We should be defanging them so they can't kill birds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they use the claws to get to the birds, though.
That's true. We'll just cut off the
legs
and the legs of cats. Well, that's about it. I mean, do you have anything else to say on the subject matter?
No.
Okay. I made some beer today.
Yeah?
Sitting right there. See? Little puddle of blankets right there. Cozy and warm in the closet.
What kind of beer did you make?
A form of a cream ale. I just sort of made up a recipe based on a recipe.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
So you make a beer? Did you make a visit to the beer shop?
Yeah, I had to get some yeast. That's all I got, and I sort of used what we had.
Nice.
A boot.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
I saw that.
Yeah, I made a plenty
distilled water over there.
Plenty of a mess.
And I was wondering what was up.
That's distilled water?
Or is it spring water? Oh!
Oops.
Is it spring water?
Yeah, it's spring water.
Sorry. False alarm!
for those of you new to homebrewing, you never use distilled water unless you're going to add the chemicals back, because the little things that make up the difference between distilled water and spring water are what make a good beer.
And that is your beer fact for today, ladies and gentlemen.
Ladles.
Ladies.
Ladles and rolling pins. Well, thank you for your time, folks at home, and hopefully we'll be doing this more regularly. Next week on Caprica Cafe, we'll be discussing the Democratic presidential thoughts on healthcare, specifically with none other than Anthony Paz and his cohort Julian Michael. Stay tuned. That's about it for Caprica Cafe. Caprica Cafe is created under the Creative Commons license. To find out more, go to creativecommons.org. Also, visit our website at capricacafe.blogspot.com.